The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
You've found the Radio Today programme this week in a leafy suburb of North London, a few stops up the Bakerloo line from the West End. Now, if you were up here looking for a flat in one of these four-storey mansion blocks, and incidentally, radio legend Gary Crowley lives up there in one of them, you might wonder what goes on in this curious building. We're on Delaware Road, looking at a long cream-coloured building with a tin roof. Looks like it might be a warehouse or something to do with London Underground. In fact, it was built as a roller skating rink, but since the 1930s, it's been owned by the BBC. It's where all those Peel sessions were recorded. It was the home of the Radiophonic Workshop, and it contains seven studios, including a huge concert hall where the BBC Symphony Orchestra lives. So, last week we were investigating speech on Radio 3. This week, it's music on Radio 4. Rock legend David Crosby is here to record an episode of the Radio 4 show Master Tapes, and I'm here to talk to its presenter, John Wilson. Welcome to BBC Maida Vale.
Make a noise. That, Trevor. Okay. You're going to be fighting that.
Here we go. So tell me about how the show Master Tapes got going.
Well, we were on air end of last year. I think we started October last year. It was just an idea that I had that you know, I've spoken to a lot of musicians on Radio 4 over the years, mostly on Front Row, one of the programmes I do. You know, and there's an idea, I think, that musicians want to talk about the songs that they've written, the things they've done over the years in a serious way. They don't always get the chance to do that on other networks. So you don't think Radio 4 the place where I'm going to listen to music, and you're not necessarily hearing music on Master Tapes, you're hearing about the way music is made, and that was the idea, really, to take
and
musicians
plug
back.
In their new album.
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, sometimes they happen to have a new album out, and if you hear about it during the course of the program, that's, you know, that's not the reason they're here. The USP, if you like, is that they come here to talk to me about where they were, what was going on in the world around them, in their head, in the hotel bedroom, on tour, when they were making a particular album. So it's always the focus on an album, usually a watershed moment, a make or break album. You know, it could be the worst album of their career. Actually, we haven't had many musicians have come here so far wanting to talk about the worst album of their career. But, you know, it's been great. Billy Bragg kicked it off. And in that first series, we also had Suzanne Vega and we had Paul Weller doing the last Jam album, you know, which was, you know, something he doesn't normally do, go back to the Jam. And we had Brinsley Ford talking about Aswad. And then the last series, we had the Waterboys and Liza Carthy and Martin Carthy together. And I think in this series, which is about to hit the airwaves in November, December, it's probably the most diverse lineup. So we got Cros here tonight. We've got David Crosby, and you can hear his guitarist still sorting his sound out.
I think he's showing someone how to do it.
To do it, yeah, exactly. Life of a musician never stops. He's just played for 2 hours here, on and off. But no, we've got David Crosby, we've got Edwin Collins, that's a programme in the can already. Astonishing programme, talking about surviving a stroke, two strokes, coming out the other side with the help of his wife Grace Maxwell, who was here with us as well. That's an amazing programme. And we recorded a programme with Natalie Merchant talking about her first solo album, Tiger Lily, after she left 10,000 Maniacs. And, where are we at the moment? What night is it? It's Monday night, isn't it? On Thursday this week, we've got Robbie Williams here. And that's taken a few months of negotiation.
What a fantastic historical place this is. I mean, just over there is the old plaque, which hangs on Maida Vale 3, which remembers not David Crosby, but Bing Crosby. And it says this was the place where he did his last radio
show. Very last session. Absolutely. His very last recording, not only last radio session, the very last recording Bing Crosby did was in this room. I mean, you know, musicians always talk about that, don't they? You go into a studio and you can just soak up the vibes. But I think, you know, it's true in this place.
Well, certainly when I used to work for the BBC, you couldn't come in here unless you were with a string quartet, my dear thing. Yeah, this was a very Radio 3 environment.
Was it really?
Yeah. Oh, my word, yes.
I've seen some great rock and roll shows in here. And it's a great sound as well. Without getting too muso about it, it does have a fantastic sound in this room. So, yeah, I mean, well, you've just sat through the programme, Trevor. I mean, we record two. You know, I do a pretty much a straight interview in the first part of the programme, what we call the A side. And in the B side, the audience have a go asking some questions, and the musician in question is illustrating the songwriting process all the way through. He has a guitar on his lap, But of course, David Crosby broke all the rules with master tapes tonight because he brought his whole band with him and made some real noise.
Now, tell me about the whole business of getting the kind of things you want to talk about onto BBC Radio 4. I mean, you are largely known for Front Row, which you mentioned, the arts programme. There are other presenters on that show. There must be a huge logjam, isn't there? That, like, this many ideas and that much programming space.
Well, Front Row is on five nights a week for half an hour. A lot of airtime in, you know, Radio 4 terms. But, I mean, when you think of what we're covering, the brief, and it is everything from, you know, David Crosby would probably be on Front Row if I hadn't bagged him for master tapes. But yeah, we're going from that to opera to, you know, classical music and ballet to books and films and, you know, the core subjects. So there is so much going on at any one moment. Then, yeah, it's quite tough to filter it. And, you know, you've just got to make a decision and think, what do people want to hear about? You know, it's a matter, it's a juggling act, really.
You have, I think it would be fair to say, one of the best jobs in radio because you get to interview not just famous people, but people you like, people who are your heroes. You do a lot of interviews with a really interesting range of folks. How did you get started? I seem to remember you as a sort of SM kind of character, weren't you?
No way. I was never. No, I was always a reporter. I came from the journalism side. Started out local newspapers and then working for what is now Five Live, but originally started out as Radio 5. They used to have schools programmes on in the daytime and a bit of, I think, the World Service. And then in the evening, they threw the 3 hours, I think it was, 7 till 10 every weekday evening to young programme makers. And I was involved in a programme called The Mix that was on the Monday night. And every night of the week you had a different programme coming from. I think Tuesday it was from Manchester. Mark Radcliffe was involved in that one. Wednesday it came from Cardiff. I think Birmingham one night, Glasgow, I can't remember. But I was there on air with, it was Mark Thomas, the comedian, who was presenting that programme first off. And I started out on that as a sort of roving reporter. But we used to have bands in session on that programme. When you think of some of the people, you know, oh, there's a band called Blur, you know, let's get them in on session. Oh, you know, play four songs for us live into the programme. And, a young band called Oasis, we'll get them on. In fact, I think Radcliffe, I think he got them for
his
Tuesday night.
Didn't you have Reese Hughes, now number two at Radio 1? He was there?
Reese was there as well. I mean, that's extraordinary when I think that actually Reese is Ben Cooper's, I think fair to say, second in command.
The Radio Today programme with
Radio
Audio
1, but yeah, I started out even further back than Radio 5 with Reese. I was actually at college with him. We were in a band together many, many years ago.
Are there tapes, John?
There are tapes. You're not hearing them, Trevor. There are tapes. I have them all. Reese was I was a good bass player. It's fair to say that Reese wasn't the greatest singer in the world, but he was a very charismatic frontman.
Didn't you have Matt Hall, the Guardian
there? Absolutely. Matt Hall was at 5. Matt, who was also at college. I mean, it sounds incredibly nepotistic and incestuous. And it was really, because Matt had got into Radio 5. And he got Reese and I in. He was at university with us as well. Matt's now running all the online speech stuff at The Guardian and doing their videos. So, yeah, the old network.
So, when it comes to getting programmes of the sort you want to make onto Radio 4, what's the process? I mean, we've talked through the whole idea of how independent producers, you know, basically they get in touch with commissioning editors and they pitch their programmes and maybe they get on and maybe they don't. You work, as it's called, in-house. So how does the process work for you?
Well, I mean, I'm in-house in that I'm on a programme which is on air every day and I get on air quite a bit, but I'm still a freelance, you know, I'm still having to pitch ideas. I mean, maybe I have a foot in the door already, and of course, when I'm seeing people, producers around me every day, a lot of them will say, look, I'm working up this idea for a programme. Do you fancy presenting it? I'll stick your name on it. It's still got to go through the bidding process. It's still got to be pitched. I mean, it's different with Front Row because I can bring ideas to that programme. It's half an hour every day. Usually we have four or five items on the programme. Sometimes, though, I mean, usually with musicians that I bring to the programme, we had Elton John on recently. It was a great interview. Do it as a half-hour special. I mean, that's happened quite a bit. It's happened with Bowie. It's happened with The Who, many people. But that's a luxury for me, you know, because I'm working within that programme. But in terms of the other programmes, documentaries or other speech programmes, yeah, I mean, I work up ideas with either producers in-house or with some of the indies. You know, I work with some of the indies as well. So it's just chancing my arm as usual.
Interesting final point to see David Crosby on the stage there tonight with his son, who was playing the keyboards and was credited with having written some songs with his dad and so on. You had a famous dad. You have a famous dad, Bob Wilson, the goalkeeper and broadcaster.
Who worked for the Beeb for a long time.
He did indeed. Was he a big influence in getting you going and thinking, yes, broadcasting, that's a thing I could do?
Do you know what? I was thinking about that the other day because he used to take me in when I was a kid every now and again when he first started at the Beeb. He was a footballer. He's finished playing. He became one of those pundits that then started presenting. He did Grandstand and Football Focus. And, you know, I guess I got taken in to the old TV Centre studios as a kid. It must have sparked something off, the idea of broadcasting. It wasn't my first thought when, you know, when I was starting off in journalism. I was going to be a writer. I was working in papers. But I guess something, you know, a light bulb went on somewhere. I mean, a weird thing happened a few years ago when, for a couple of years, I was doing a bit of stand-in work on Newsnight Review on the Friday night when Newsnight finished, and then you had, you know, the review program after that. And there was a very strange moment when I was doing one of my first programs there. I was doing the run-through, looking at the auto cue, and one of the old studio floor managers came up to me and said, you know, I used to work with your dad in this very studio on Grandstand. And I said, wow, you've been here a long time. He said, yeah, it's amazing. And here you are now. You look exactly like your dad, but an older version of your dad. And what he meant was, of course, my dad was there younger than I was at that moment. In his mind, my dad was, you know, probably in his mid-30s or something when he was there, and it stuck in his memory. And there I was looking like an older version of my dad. Oh, not the sort of thing you want to hear before you're about to broadcast live on BBC Two.
John Wilson, thank you very much for talking to the Radio Today programme.
Pleasure.
The Radio Today programme.
David Lloyd's radio moments to come, but time for some news now. Here's Radio Today's editor, Roy Martin.
Thank you, Trevor. Well, the big news of the week, of course, is that commercial radio has turned 40 years old. It was the 8th of October 1973 when LBC 97.3, I wonder if they named the frequency after the year, after the station came on the air for the very first time. Much celebration. We're marking the occasion on Radio Today all this week with a special blog every day by those who have lived through it. And Global Radio, owners of LBC 97.3, have celebrated as well with a swanky do in Westminster on Tuesday evening. See more on eRadio this week. Also, the news this week is that the iPlayer is getting a revamp next year. Tony Hall, Director General, announced the changes. Radio 1 will get a TV channel and you will have 30 days to watch television programmes. No news of extra radio facilities as yet. And Edith Bowman has lost her weekend show on Six Music. She'll be replaced by Huey Morgan. And that's the very latest. Don't forget, if you're in Salford on the 13th of October, ahead of the radio festival, then we'll be doing drinks along with Real World on the 7th. It's a private lounge on Sunday evening in the Blue Tower at Media City UK. Hopefully we will see you there.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audioboo, sharing voices with the world.
Radio Moments. Radio Moments.
It is well known that the Labour Party have opposed the introduction of commercial broadcasting. But that in no way prevents me from offering my best wishes to the Independent Broadcasting News Service.
Words of welcome, well, sort of, from the leader of the opposition, Harold Wilson, this week in 1973, as UK commercial radio began at last.
Welcome to LBC at 6 o'clock, October the 8th. My name's David Jessel, this is The Morning Show, and here's the news.
Britain's first commercial radio station went on the air just a few minutes ago, and you're listening to it. London Broadcasting Company, an all-news and information service for London, will operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The company will also be supplying a new service to 60 other commercial stations, which are to open in Britain, several of them within a few months.
The launch of LBC, the winner from five applications to run the London News franchise.
From London Weekend Television, congratulations and welcome to London Broadcasting. We wish you good luck and success in the exciting challenge of launching independent radio broadcasting for the first time in this country.
Well, we had planned to start by congratulating ourselves on being born, but the morning show is your update on the day, and whatever we may think, there are more important matters today than the fact that we've hit the airwaves. It's clearly a day dominated by two major stories, the Middle East War, of which it's day three, and at home, the new Phase 3 proposals in Mr. Heath's effort to blow us back on course economically. We must start...
The headlines then, as the headlines now. Politicians with plans to put the economy back on track. By the end of the year, troubled LBC, as the press always called it, needed another £500,000 cash, three of the top brass had resigned, and an ad agency had carried out some research. They knocked on 222 doors at 8 in the morning to find that five homes were tuned to Capital and none to LBC. It could only get better, and in time it surely did. The first ad on this new commercial radio came from Birdseye.
Birdseye welcomes radio. It's classics, greats and singers. Good luck, commercial radio. From Birdseye, fish fingers.
Back then, ads were limited to 9 minutes an hour and no sponsorship allowed. Happy 40th birthday, commercial radio. Famously, the original LBC lost its licence 20 years later. As did Devonair Radio. This same week in 93, a four-paragraph surprise note arrived at the station to say its licence would not be renewed. And this week, 30 years ago, commercial radio's first full casualty.
The board of directors were acquainted last evening with the fact that the IBA, the Independent Broadcasting Authority, had ruled against an offer being made by Crestnote, a company formed by Mr. Geoffrey Poynton together with a consortium, for the shares of Leicester and Leicestershire Radio PLC. Under the circumstances, the board have no alternative but to cease trading.
The end of Centre Radio in Leicester this week in 1983.
It's the sound of Leicestershire.
The BBC now, and this week, 33 years ago, a new series on Radio 4.
This is You and Yours, introduced by Janine McMullen. Hello again. A day up in London for the Cup Final. That's really what we're going to talk about today. Tomorrow is a rather special cup final in a way, in that Arsenal is...
It was all very posh back then, wasn't it? Another Radio 4 programme on air to this day began this week in 1946, Woman's Hour. Olive Shapley was an early presenter.
I'd just joined then and went up to Durham and got some miners in Newcastle studio. And the idea was that they talked freely about life down the pit and life in a mining village. And they were very nice men, and they talked so freely that after about 3 minutes I was sent in with... great bit of cardboard saying, do not say bloody or bugger.
Happy birthday, Woman's Hour, 67 years old this week. BBC Local Radio arrived in London this week in 1970.
We sport on the heights of Hampstead, we snooze in the depths of Bow, and we stick up our nose from our Chelsea boat when the tide on the Thames is low.
We had 3 weeks of training, we had 2 weeks of pilot programmes, and then I think we were on the air. There might have been 1 week in between or something like that.
You're in tune with BBC Radio London, broadcasting with a radiated power of 17 kilowatts, on a frequency of 95.3 megahertz from a transmitter at Rootham in Kent. If you're receiving us, please drop us a line to let us know.
Dear sir, I can't hear you. It's been a week of BBC premises moves through the years. This week in 96, Joe Wiley became the last Radio 1 presenter to broadcast from Egton House. And it's now exactly 2 years since BBC Manchester first broadcast from Media City after 35 years at Oxford Road.
Salford. Literally, a ford by the willow trees. I drive one of them. Mind you, a willow tree's hard to start in the morning. There aren't many willows round here now. Come to think of it, there aren't that many cranes. There used to be 200 of them. Now there are two. It's where Manchester brought the sea 36 miles inland to make it the largest inland port in the world in its day.
So with DQF arriving this week 2 years ago, the pirate Kiss FM launching this week 28 years ago, and Virgin winning a surprise FM licence in London this week 19 years ago, those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David Lloyd. Thank you, Roy Martin. This has been the Radio Today programme, a TDC production. Thank you very much for listening. Next week, of course, we'll be at the Radio Festival in Salford. See you then.